This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I'm good, and you?
I'm doing good. Good. I have.
Where are you from?
I run a site called Collider.
No. Where are you from?
Oh, I live in Los Angeles.
Okay.
But I'm going to start with. I need to start with a question. Where is it? Mr. Edgar Wright wants to know, who is your favorite Wright, Joe or Edgar?
Edgar.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Did you? Have you been in email touch with him today?
Yes.
Tell him that I love all my rights.
Oh, this is going online.
I love all my rights, and it would be impossible to say which one I love more.
Okay.
But if you really pushed me, it would be Joe.
Simon Pegg wants to know, do you like Simon more, or, no, he says, ask him who he likes best, Huge, Grant, or me?
Definitely Simon Pegg.
Now, are these just the answers you're giving because...
No. I always tell the truth. Is that it? You haven't got one from Nick?
No, I didn't know.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. Okay, you can ask them a question. Are they working?
Yeah, I would imagine they are because it took them a while to get back
to
me.
What is it? It's 6 o'clock. Night shoots. Yeah, they'll be on set now.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right, so let's jump into why I'm actually getting to talk to you today. Enough of my fucking around. So you've produced like over 100 movies.
We think it's... it's weird with numbers. We can't work out how many it is, but between us, we think it's around 96, 97.
Well, I'm using the always accurate IMDb, which never makes a mistake.
Yeah, or IMDb, there's a few things on there that are TV, they're not films, some things that they think we didn't, there's a few inaccuracies in there.
How, for you, you've been producing
it's
now...
It's terrifying, though, isn't it?
It is. I was admiring your resume this morning, noticing that you started with Sid and Nancy, mm-hmm. which is, I mean, talk about starting with a bang, and you've been going since then. How has the industry for you changed in the years you've been doing this? Is there something that you like really noticed, or is it sort of like every few years there's always a shift?
There's the shifts happen on a regular basis, but it's like a cycle. So things come in and out of vogue, and then 5 years later they're back in vogue, or there seems to be a theory that this is the way the industry will go and everyone goes over that way, and then something happens to the contrary and woo, you're back again at the place you were. So it's, to me, it does shift, but it goes around, just keeps going round and round and round. So if you have the longevity, if you have the belief and you have the resources to just keep at it, you just ignore all that and just keep going where you're at. Right now, there is a real seismic shift, though. Are we all right here?
No, yeah, I always like looking and making sure.
I'll take that away in case it buzzes. There is a bit of a seismic shift, and that is that the industry is actually physically changing. Before, it was all about taste, and the tastes were the things that kind of went round and round. Suddenly small English films were in vogue. You had something like The Crying Game, and everyone piled into London and wanted to make, small English movies. And then something fails, and they're all out again. But DVD revenue is disappearing. It's not disappearing, but it's going off a cliff. And what that's done is it's polarized the industry in a way that I've never seen before, where studios are making less. They're bifurcating their choices, where they're either going very, very big or they're just picking up a few rights on an acquisition basis or making really small things. And that middle ground of films... and the middle ground used to be 70, 80, 90, 100.
Sure.
Now it's like anything over 20 and under 140. It's like the middle ground has become this huge area where they don't really want to be. Now, there's always exceptions to that. And the reason for it is that if the film doesn't really work, whereas before you could rely on a decent amount of DVD sales to prop up the revenue to ensure that you got out in a decent manner, now you don't. If the film doesn't work, the film doesn't work, and there's none of that DVD revenue to fall back on, and you can lose a huge, huge sum of money on a mid-budget movie. So that is new in terms of where I've seen the shifts. Otherwise, it's all about taste, and taste just keeps going round and round and round. For us in England, the dollar, the relative value of the pound against the dollar, that has a huge impact on how easy it is to get our films made in the UK. When the dollar's at 2-1, it's very hard. When it's at 150, it's much easier. So at the moment, it's around 155, 160. So it's good. People are piling into England. There's a lot of studio films happening there. When we budget our films and we multiply it by 1.55, it's much easier than when we multiply it by 2. So the cost looks a lot less in dollars because everyone talks in dollars in terms of finance. And then the shift that I think is coming I hope is coming, is the movies made simple is the wrong word, but in a, sorry, I'm just looking down there, something weird's going on. The whole process has got, you visit movie sets all the time, I imagine. It's just got so big. And
although I will tell you, I've been on some movie sets where it feels way more intimate than I ever expected for a mega budget. And then sometimes I've been on sets where there's like 100 people standing around.
But I think the former, those sets that you've been on like that, even if they're huge movies and most of it's being spent in special effects afterwards, I think that's the way that we're going. And I think everyone's going to really, really try and keep costs down. You know, the more you keep costs down, the more freedom you have creatively. The more, I can protect my filmmakers from any form of creative interference, be it from, anywhere, if we're all acting in a responsible way and making the pain of a failure be as little as possible.
Sure. I hear this from every filmmaker. Yeah. It's a question of budget versus creative freedom.
Yeah.
I do want to, because believe me, I have 1,000 questions and very limited time. I do want to ask, though, I look at video on demand, not in iTunes specifically. In the last year, I've used iTunes more and more to get movies, to rent movies, and I've used Amazon. Have you seen money coming in through VOD?
But it's taking off. You know, whereas the DVD revenue is going off like that, this one's coming up like this. It's not, they're not matching each other yet.
Sure,
but they will. You know, my theory is that I don't know how long it's going to be, 5 years, 10 years. There will be only two ways to see a movie, and that will be either on your computer through your TV screen, or it'll be one screen, or in the cinema. End of story. There will be no DVD. There will be no, that's it. It's just simple. And the pay window will be, you can choose how and where you see it, whether you see it on, Comcast's or Warner's cable delivery system, or Sky in the UK, or you buy it through Apple, or you might even buy it directly from the studio's own site. You know, who knows? But that will be it. You'll go to the cinema and you'll find a way of digitally interacting with the piece, and you'll either rent it or buy it or whatever.
Getting into Les Mis for a second, how long have you been with this project trying to get this thing going?
I met with Cameron in 2009. The guy that runs his company in England, a chap called Nick Allott, is a very, very good friend of mine. And he just said to me one day, I think Cameron, it was 20 years ago or 24 years ago when he last tried to make this as a movie. Alan Parker was going to direct it at Columbia. I think he might be ready to have the conversation again. So if you're interested, why don't you see if you can persuade him? So I went to his office and started to persuade him. And we got on well. We created a partnership. And look, Tim Bevan, we can put him in the interview. And decided to do it. And it was complicated because, I knew the way in which a film gets made, that the filmmaker would need a certain amount of control. And I also knew that from Cameron's point of view, him and Claude Michel and Alain, who've spent 30 years creating this masterpiece, this theatrical masterpiece, of course they should have some control. So it was complicated working out how we would make the rub work. Ultimately, it worked beautifully. Everybody got on famously. There was a lot of trust in the process. Claude Michel, Alain, and Cameron brought the detail and magic and knowledge of the music world, and we brought the detail and knowledge and magic of the film world, and Tom was right in the middle trying to do all of it, and we've all ended up friends with what I think. Well, for me, the film, I can't tell you whether the film's good or bad. All I can say is, for me, the film is way better than I had expectation of us being able to make. So for me, that's the most important thing. Have we exceeded our dream in terms of what it could be? And I think we have. And the dream was to not only make a good-looking film that engaged, but also had the DNA of the show so the fans would love it. And also, as important, had the opportunity to cross over outside of the fans because of the price point. If you make a film at $60 million, you can't just appeal to, musical theatre fans. You've got to make it appeal to...
I will tell you, as an outsider... It looks a lot better than $60 million. It looks real good on the screen.
Good.
And the movie's real fucking good. Sorry for cursing.
Good. Do you come at it as a fan of the show?
Not at all.
Yeah, I see. Well, you're who I'm really excited to get to.
Yeah, no, it's quite good. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely curious. Movie's about.
You know, when we say quite good, it means it's okay.
No, it's when I say quite good.
You mean very good?
Yeah, I would see it again, and that's my definition. Great. And I would recommend. My biggest thing is.
Would you recommend it?
My biggest thing is when I get out of the movie, do I want to tell someone they have to go see it? Mm. That's it, right there. Because if you don't want to tell anyone that you want to see this movie, you're fucked.
You're fucked. Yeah.
Because on Friday night on Facebook and Twitter, when people aren't recommending it, you're dead on Saturday.
Yeah.
And I think that the performance is. Anyway, I'm putting myself into this and I don't want to. It's quite good.
Good, thank you.
Curious, the movie's about 2.5 hours. Mm. How long was your first cut on this thing?
About 4 and a bit.
Now, the big question is, if this is a huge hit in theaters, is there the possibility of doing like a re-release extended cut?
There's always that possibility, but it would take a hell of a lot of work, because unlike a movie where you just have to do a bit of ADR and then some mixing, we've actually got to bring the orchestra back, because you know there is music, as you probably noticed, right the way through the film. So you have to orchestrate all of that extra time. So, and it wasn't because we cut songs out, it was because we cut bits of songs or bits of action or bits of whatever out. So we'd have to go back in and get a full orchestra and reorchestrate it, rescore it, re-record it. It's a massive job. But if there's a demand, we can always discuss it.
Is there the possibility of doing an extended cut on, say, the Blu-ray down the road? Are there, like, deleted scenes that came out at the last second that you had scored that were ready?
No, there's not. No, we only scored the very finished film. I mean, the one thing, Tom did an amazing thing. We screened the film at 2 hours 46 or 47 minutes to the studio and then to a little bit of a wider audience, but not that much wider. And it went down incredibly well, and everyone really, really liked it. And we said it would be great if it was shorter. How could we try and make it a bit shorter? But it works pretty well as is. And Tom, to his credit, and I've worked with many, many directors, and they would have just gone locked. He came back to London, and he just said, okay, let's go. And he cut 17 minutes out of it in a matter of 2 weeks. And I watched the film and I could hardly see the cuts. It was incredible what he did. Just literally, him and his editor, they just kind of shaved it. And the film suddenly had a... Because you would have noticed that it motors the film. It kind of, you know, it literally just sprints from one scene to the next. And I think for a musical, you've got to do that. Because otherwise, people who aren't used to musicals could find themselves getting bored or whatever. So he cut it down, and I think it's good at that length. So the answer ultimately is no. We never scored. We never orchestrated that longer version. But we could. We might do. One song with Sasha that Sasha sang in the sewers that isn't in the movie. That's the only song. And that would be very doable to put that back.
I definitely want to jump in because I'm going to run out of time. I want to jump into a few things real fast. Is there any possibility of a Tinker Tailor sequel?
We're working on. Tim's running it, and I can't remember. Which one? Yes, but I can't remember the...
Oh, I can't remember the name of the next book.
I will get it for you, but we are working on another one. Tim is putting it together as we speak with Peter Strawn and... Christ, I can't remember anyone's names.
You guys can...
Thomas Alfredson. So, yes, it's in development.
Because it did like $80 million worldwide.
Yeah, it did unbelievably well, and it didn't cost hardly anything.
Well, that's what I was going to say, and I know Gary Oldman because I talked to him about it. He loved playing the character. Loved.
Mm.
So, I'm assuming he's still very excited to play the character again.
Yeah.
So, is this a priority for you guys?
Yeah. But things take time.
No, totally.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's like I really enjoyed that movie, and I think that the more you see it, the more you get out of it. So I'm glad to hear that you guys are working on it.
Tim is he's passionate about making sure that we do another one.
You recently worked with Richard Curtis on About Time.
Yeah.
I spoke to someone who was in it recently. When someone's made Love Actually, which is on Christmas, on TV all the time, does that get you a lot more creative freedom? Because everyone loves that movie?
Richard... Yeah, I mean, Richard's unique. You know, he's made...
Just a few.
He's never written a script that hasn't been made. His films have done billions of dollars. And he's only had one film that wasn't a success. which was a shame because I really liked it, Boat That Rocked. And so, yeah, but it's not an expensive film. It's a small film. It's a romantic comedy about two people meeting and falling in love and having a family. That's it.
Sure.
Has a bit of time travel in it. But
a bit of time travel.
Just, you know, who doesn't?
Right.
And it's a beautiful thing. We screened it two nights ago in Los Angeles, and the preview was, I mean, the numbers were amazing. People absolutely adored it.
Richard seems to have a touch. He gets it with people. He has that thing. Definitely, you obviously produced, you've worked with Edgar, Nick, and Simon.
Love Edgar, Nick, and Simon.
As do I, and as does all my readers. Incredibly excited about what they're filming right now. What can you tease people about how it's going? What can you tell?
Well, I can tell them that they're all very wet and very cold because they're doing four weeks of night shoots, and the weather's brutal. It's really... So I bought Edgar a furry hat to try and keep him warm, but they're just digging in and doing it. But the work is fantastic, very, very funny. There's these great scenes with Nick with these bar stools, you know, just beating the shit out of people. Simon, very funny, great cast with him. You know, Rosamund Pike, Paddy Considine, Eddie Marzan, and Martin Freeman.
Sure.
Martin was slightly shocked apparently the other day. I just heard this secondhand, but he had to go to New Zealand for the premiere of The Hobbit, and Naira, our producing partner with Edgar, was telling me that he called because he got to the airport and apparently his face is painted on all of the Air New Zealand planes.
Yep.
And he got there and saw this plane his face was painted on the outside of it, so I think he's kind of slightly shocked at the moment. But it's going brilliantly, and it's going to be funny, and Edgar's on very good form.
I would imagine that's one of those, with them and the success they've had with the other films, I would imagine it was not hard to get people to be a part of it when you guys said, hey,
No, I mean, in terms of putting the cast together, no problems. And, you know, the only problem always is just price point. It's, you know, our ambitions as we get older, all of us, is to try and do more, and... You know, the problem with Hot Fuzz and Shaun is that they worked brilliantly in the UK, the US, and Australia. And internationally, they haven't worked so well because people don't know the films as well as in the English-speaking languages. So when it comes to putting the budgets together, it's quite, you know, it's challenging. So those are the problems you have.
Before I run out of time, as I see the evil eye hitting me, what's the status of the Bridget Jones Baby movie?
Can I take the fifth on that?
Yes. How is The History Keepers?
Development.
Have you seen a rough cut of Rush?
I've seen more than a rough cut. I've seen nearly a finished film. It's great. Daniel Brühl. I mean,
that's what we keep on. Michael Moses from Universal.
Hemsworth's great, but we know Hemsworth's great. Daniel Brühl is a surprise, and we love a surprise. He's brilliant.
Yeah, because he was... I know that he must have test screened it recently because all I saw was a tweet saying, look out for him. And I'm like, oh, you just test screened Rush.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, we did. And the amazing thing... Were you there?
I wasn't. I think I was
there. The amazing thing was, here's a film about Formula One, which firstly isn't of a lot of interest in the US anyway, yet. And it's a man's sport and it's a period film. The women scored through the roof in the preview. Now, it's only a preview, but they absolutely adored it. I mean, the men loved it too, but the women's scores were huge.
Hence the reason why I think Chris Hemsworth is popular.
You think so?
I think
so?
It has something to do with him.
You think he's easy on the eye?
I would say that the women that I know in my life seem to like him a lot.
Good.
That's what I'm going to say. This whole Thor thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was perfectly cast.
Yeah, he is. He does a lot of shagging in the movie.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So there's the thing.
He does a lot of naked shagging.
My last question for you. What else is kicking up for you right now in terms of things that you guys are getting excited to produce, or what are you getting ready to shoot?
We're next year, I mean, we got all the films we did this year. We did, I think, 7 films this year. Next year, we'll hopefully do a Stephen Daldry film called Trash. We're looking at putting together a film director of Contraband.
I just interviewed
Balthazar.
Yeah, no.
Balthazar for a project called Everest.
Yeah, I'm running an interview with him on Everest.
Okay, great.
Like, I have it all in my server.
Great.
It's just a question of running
Everest, a romantic comedy that Richard wrote, actually, that Tom Harper's going to direct. called Lost for Words, set in China and London, and The Snowman, the Joe Nesbo book, which is a thriller about a serial killer, starring a detective called Harry Hole, and it's part of a 9-book series.
I was told that Everest might be casting someone very big very soon.
You'd have to ask my partner about that.
I'll leave you there.
Great.
Let me install.
Okay. Brilliant.